The Morrison government has released the final report into a review of Australia's environmental law, 3 months after receiving it from former competition watchdog boss Graeme Samuel. It finds that the environment has suffered from 2 decades of failure by governments to improve and implement protections meant to ensure the survival of Australia's unique wildlife, with business also being caught up in red tape. Among the 38 recommendations is a call for a major overhaul of Australia's environmental laws, including new mandatory national environmental standards and the establishment of independent monitoring bodies. Susan Lee is the Federal Environmental Minister. Federal Environment Minister. Welcome to RN Breakfast. Welcome
back. Lovely to join you in the studio, Norman.
So this report warns of dire consequences if these recommendations are ignored, and it sounds as if you've ignored them already.
Not at all. When I started this modernisation process, I said this Act hasn't been touched essentially for 20 years, and it's time that we modernised it, that we focused, as Graeme Samuel says, on outcomes, not process. It's a very process-driven piece of legislation. It's incredibly duplicative. If you're on the environmental side or the business and development side, you all agree that it has failings. So it is failing to protect the environment, but it's also failing to support ecologically sustainable development, which is actually what its purpose is. So Graeme Samuel's handed down his report. We tabled it yesterday. I think he's done an excellent job. We're going to work carefully through the recommendations. There's a big piece of reform ahead of us.
He says you can't cherry pick these recommendations. Mm. They're a package. So you've already seemed to have rejected an independent regulator to want to monitor this, and there's no environmental standards in your bill.
Not at all. I've always said assurance or an independent regulator is vital. There's been discussion about what that looks like and where that lives. So the discussion has been about form rather than function. We pretty much all agree that assurance is important. In fact, it's very important. It gives confidence to the overall system. I sat down with a round table of stakeholders yesterday. I drew their attention to Graeme Samuel's Environment Assurance Commissioner model, asked them what they thought of it. Lots of agreement round the table. We will work through that. In terms of standards, National Cabinet met towards the end of last year and agreed to progress the standards as a matter of priority. So I'll be picking that piece of work up again. That was identified early.
I mean, to get the crossbench to support you, they're going to have to be in the bill, aren't they?
The standards will be, I anticipate, within their own legislative head of power. So that gives them rigour, if you like, as they sit next to the bilateral agreements we will have with the states and the assurance model. I see it as a whole package, and people need to have a good look at it. And that's why, as we work through the recommendations, we'll let them do that. And of course, I'll be having those conversations with colleagues.
How can you expect the crossbench to pass this bill if it's just on a promise that the environmental standards are coming, since it's all wrapped up in one? If you're going to give this to the states, so I should just explain really that for a single touch approach, you're vesting power in the states to approve projects so that business doesn't have to mess around. But they've really got to do that within a strong regulatory environment. And the reservation is that it's not in the bill. So you're going to give it to the states. Mm. They're off and running. They're quite happy to do it, but they're not necessarily able to do it.
Well, a couple of things there, Norman. There is a streamlining bill before the Parliament now, but I anticipate further pieces of legislation, regulation to implement standards. And I made that very clear with the streamlining bill. That gives the architecture, it sets the framework, and of course we'll introduce standards and we'll give people a good look at them and we'll draw their attention to the National Cabinet decision that we start with standards that come directly from the Act. But just on the states, I do want to make this point. We're not handing anything over to the states. We're accrediting them against our strong national standards. Yes, that's
which
right.
Which you don't have yet.
Yes, we do. We're bringing those standards forward. We're developing now. National Cabinet said turn the existing Act into standards and start there. That's where we do want to start, and that's where I'm going to start when I talk to, as you say, Crossbench and other colleagues. But the states and the Commonwealth are not harmonised. And what we will do is accredit the states against those national standards. So we're not handing over control of environmental protection to them. We're retaining that by way of Commonwealth oversight.
So what are the criteria for accreditation of states?
We'll look at the acts that they have in place. They have to meet those national standards. And yes, people will see the standards. We'll have to identify their compliance processes against those standards. And if their acts don't measure up, then they'll have to make changes to them. So that is the nature of the bilateral agreement that we'll have with each state. And I've also been criticised by people who say, oh, it'll be different with each state. No, it won't. It'll be one set of national standards. And I expect, in the conversations I've had with environment ministers, they're very interested in this, but we've all got that ambition to lift environment protection across the country. And I see that as a very strong outcome, because when you get these blockages, this unnecessary complication, you actually get process for no environment improvement, and you get the duplication that leads to frustration. I think the average time for approval is 1,009 days. Time is money, and it doesn't necessarily add up to protection of our precious environment.
I mean, if I was sitting on the crossbench, say, Rex Patrick, the last thing I'd want to do is approve your streamlining bill until I've seen concrete standards on the table with legislation there that's been properly consulted. I mean, when's that? What's the time frame for that?
Totally understand that. I've had lots of conversations with Rex, sent him a quick text yesterday to say when we're catching up next week, and exactly that matter, I'll be able to put those ideas to him, hear his thoughts, and continue the discussion. And I totally accept that people do need to have a look at the standards.
And the independent regulator, that's sealed in concrete. You're not resiling from that one, because
last time I think
we spoke to you, that was really in question.
No, the independent regulator needs to be strong, needs to be, as we say, and you've just said, independent, needs to be a cop on the beat. Exactly how and where it lives within government is a matter for discussion. But as I said, Graham Samuels made some good recommendations in Chapter 7 about what it looks like. I've had a look at them. I've asked other people what they think. I'm very comfortable that we'll work through to a strong model that provides the assurance that absolutely underpins our standards and our agreements with the states.
So why rushing through the streamlining bill when there are all these loose ends?
Well, that was at the end of last year. And I mean, rushing is probably not the word I'd use. We needed to get our skates on and start a really long reform process. But we all knew that the Act was deficient. We all knew the Act wasn't working. So that was a first important step to change.
But you're opening yourself up to criticism that you're just pleasing business here and not the environmental lobby by going hell for leather with the streamline bill?
Definitely not. And I do appreciate that the streamlining bill comes first, and business, industry, and our green groups and communities, because communities are very much embedded and invested in environmental protection, will need to have their say about the next steps. And I'm looking forward to that.
Let's go to the Labour front bench reshuffle. Mark Butler's been dumped from the climate change and energy portfolio to be replaced by Chris Bowen. That's moved, seen as allaying concerns in mining electorates and probably being a bit pro-business. Does this narrow the policy difference between the government and the opposition?
Well, I tend not to make gratuitous remarks about colleagues in the parliament, and Labour's reshuffles are a matter for Labour. I know they do, Norman. What I would say is I just haven't seen clear policy come from Labour on the matter of the new front bench ministers, shadow ministers, will need to articulate some policy pretty quickly, because at the moment I'm not seeing any at all.
So Parliament resumes. Independent MP Zali Steggall's private members bill is up there for a 2050 net zero emissions target. Australian business is in support of that. Why isn't the government?
Well, the Prime Minister and Angus Taylor have said they'll move to net zero emissions as quickly as possible. But they'll do it via technology, not taxes. They'll use the technology roadmap, the 5 stretch targets, as Angus Taylor calls them. And I must note, as someone from a rural electorate, one of them is soil carbon. Improving the health, the carbon, the water retention in our soils lends very easily and well to our climate adaptation agenda, which I have responsibility for. And we've made some global partnerships and agreements about the work we will do on climate adaptation, recognising a climate that is changing and adapting our landscape and systems in support.
But without a target, you don't know where you are. I mean, for example, the science says that unless you reduce the target by 2030 to by 50% on 2005 levels, you're not going to get there. And already we're seeing the effects of a 1.1 degree rise, and to hold it up to 2 degrees, you're really going to be struggling. And yet there's this resistance to targets.
There's no resistance to the target in the Paris Agreement. There's no resistance to our ambition to reach net zero via a clearly articulated pathway. I think there would be resistance from the Australian people if they saw targets that are effectively there in design only, but not in purpose, not in practical action, and that may well cause them to lose confidence and have rising electricity prices and affect their standard of living. So we're taking this in a staged and appropriate process. And as I said, we're being practical about the things we can do with climate adaptation, with climate resilience. A new part of my department is dedicated to climate resilience services to inform people, to allow them to have the best information.
But it's wrecking the environment you're pledged to protect.
Well, I don't agree with that, Norman. I think that we need to recognise that the climate is changing and Australian farmers and, in fact, the community as a whole needs to adapt to that and give them the best tools to manage that. But remember, I talked about soil carbon before. You know, that's a good story to tell. That's something the rest of the world is really interested in. That adds to the resilience of our farming system. So it, if you like, ticks a box for the environment, ticks a box for carbon emissions, but also for farmers. And farmers manage 50% of our environment, and they do it very well in many cases, and they're very interested in developing adaptation around the changing climate.
Susan, thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Federal Environment Minister Susan Lee.